From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of September 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds from Windsor, Illinois, will join us to take a look at what's been happening in the cash grain market. We'll follow that up as we close out our time together by having a discussion about the commodity market's weather, that with Mike Tenura at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. And along the way, I'll update you on the agricultural news for the afternoon. And I'll ask you to make your pledge of financial support to Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. About 40% of our budget comes from you, our listeners. Do that right now if you want at 217-333-9455. That's 217-BIG-WILL or at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
You're very welcome, Todd. Actually, today I'm actually in Illinois.
Are you? Where are you today?
I am up at the farm.
Oh, how are things? Have they harvested the crop there yet?
The corn is gone. They still have to come back for the soybeans, but the priority was to get the corn because it started, everybody was worried that it was falling down, so they decided to go after the corn.
Well, I have got, on my own farm, I have to pass this along. I don't know that everybody actually has this, but it looks like, from the photo that my brother just sent me on text, that I've got a yield of 74 bushel the acre running on that 80 acres. And Dan, that's on soybeans, after soybeans in Logan County. So that's just, that's a darn good yield. And actually, that's two bushels better than last year. So I guess that if it had been after corn, you know, I think the drag's about 5 bushel there. So after corn, that would have been a pretty good yield. So we'll see how that turns out. But Rob is in the combine, I think, apparently at this point on the farm, and kind of interesting to watch those yields work through the process. Now, I have to ask, because you've been watching the charts really closely, and last week you began to get at least friendly to the marketplace. What do you see this week?
Well, I think one still has to stay friendly. Last week, the market was able to, you know, bounce off of those September crop report lows, and then the lows that were made right after the tariffs or the expansion to that $200 million worth of tariffs to China. Your soybeans fell down underneath their sideways-type trading range. And then once that was all over with, the market came back and put in some solid weekly closes last week. And up through today, the market has been able to build on them. Now, the only problem with the month is we have tomorrow morning's grain stocks report from the USDA. Now, as a rule, I kind of feel grain stocks reports are basically numbers that explain why the market did what it did over the past 30 days, more so than what it will do over the next 30 days, because these numbers are surveyed as of September 1st, and we're a full month away. So whether they were bearish or bullish or neutral seems to be, it should be pretty well in place, but not all reports and not all markets react the same. But barring any major shocker that would discount what the market has already priced into the market, we have a good shot at closing higher for the month of September. Now, September, like I mentioned last week, if you line up 20 years, 16 of them, they're going to close lower, 4, they're going to close higher. If you go to 30 years, you're probably going to have 6 close lower, and you're going to have 24 close higher. So it's kind of 80% probability that the market closes lower during the month of September. And basically what that is initial harvest pressure coming off of the seasonal high. And a lot of times markets work lower into the first 10 days or so of October. Beans are really dominant, making October lows and then never really looking back unless there's some kind of real bearish event comes along. Corn has a tendency to have an early October low, but then it has a tendency to maybe come back and test that October low when December futures go into expiration. So right at the moment, we kind of got a mixed signal. On the futures side of the equation, we basically have November soybeans ahead for the month by a few cents. But if you go over into the cash market, we're about unchanged. So tomorrow's real important to get a higher monthly close both on the futures and on the Central Illinois cash chart. Now on corn, it's opposite. Corn futures or December corn futures are closed today pretty much unchanged for the month. But when you go over and look at the Central Illinois cash chart, we're actually higher for the month. And I think that the higher cash market for corn, I think one of the reasons why that may be that tells you the basis is narrowing in corn a little bit, or the basis is improving. And, you know, you can kind of look at the last 2 weeks of weekly export sales on corn. We're above trade expectations. And again, today, really through the roof at 1.7 million tons. Now, soybean demand actually has been a little better than what everybody's expected, but we're still lacking China demand. But we do seem to be picking up demand from Europe. We seem to be picking up demand from Mexico, at least in the short run. And that's kind of helping out the underlying fundamentals in soybeans.
Do you have targets to the upside that are good targets at this point for both corn and soybeans?
Well, those are the $64 million questions, I guess.
Yes, they are.
Targets. Let me punch my monthly charts back to a daily chart here on my November soybeans. Just looking at the November soybeans, I think we're kind of vulnerable to maybe some kind of setback to start off the month of October. But I still think when you look at what we've done, if we did put a low in soybeans by closing out the month of September higher, basically the seasonals now are kind of like rowing a boat downstream. So the soybean market should be easier to go higher during the next 30 days or so. So I guess I would say the initial target, we're sitting here about, 853, 854. My guess is that we're going to try to take a run up toward the $9 area. And I kind of think we might be carving out a trading range, you know, kind of between, you know, 820 to the $9 area, or maybe it might be like 890. You know, halfway up to that point would be something around the 870, 875. But I think since soybeans has the most obnoxious basis level, that probably most of the strength in soybeans may come, you know, more in the cash market as soybean harvest advances. But we kind of got to get the soybean, we kind of got to get everything under roof before the basis level really begins to come in any, but you know, like in corn's case, we've seen strong export demand and we've got strong domestic demand. So that's what I think is making the corn market kind of come in a little better, more so than soybeans. But I would be looking at something around, you know, a target level, I would say $9, that might be rich. If you don't want to be on the rich side, maybe look for something around 880 for beans that maybe need to be priced this fall or prior to the end of the year. Okay, let's take a look at corn. We'll go over to December corn. Now, that one's probably got a little more optimism. And, of course, the balance sheet on corn is much improved. Corn's also kind of in a situation where it's kind of vulnerable to maybe some kind of period of consolidation or some kind of setback, maybe to start off the month of October. But my upside target on corn anyway, I would kind of use something up around, let me look here, oh, $3.90 to $3.95, maybe even $4 on December corn. That sounds a little rich. So if you don't want to be real greedy, you'd probably want to maybe shoot for something more around the $3.85 area for corn sales that maybe needed to be done, you know, during harvest here or prior to December 1st or something like that.
Hey, I appreciate all the time you spent with us today, and thank you so much.
Very well, Todd. Talk to you next week.
And we'll talk with you then. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with the Federal Reserve, which this week raised by a quarter point the interest rate on short-term loans. The Fed is hopeful that will pull the reins in on the economy just a bit as it chugs along at full steam ahead. However, in the agricultural world, it also means the dollar may go up, says the chief economist at USDA, Rob Johansson.
And that has the effect of making it more difficult for our producers to sell our products overseas. We've become a little bit less competitive on the global scene.
The emphasis there is on a little bit. However, there are other impacts of a higher interest rate.
Land and capital equipment would probably go down in value a little bit. As the interest rates go up, it becomes a little bit more difficult to buy those, and therefore demand for those assets will fall.
Also, when interest rates rise, farm commodity prices may fall just a little bit, and it costs farmers more money to borrow money, to the tune maybe of about 17% this year, says Rob Johansson. Johansson, of course, the chief economist at the United States Department of Agriculture. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., but switch to trade for a moment. The United States and Japan have agreed to begin some trade negotiations. Gary Crawford has more with the president and Ted McKinney.
Can some people forecast the future? Well, back in January, the Agriculture Department's Undersecretary for Trade, Ted McKinney, told an audience as far as some kind of trade agreement with Japan is concerned.
I believe it is not a matter of if, but when something will come.
And sure enough, something came this week after meeting with Japanese Prime Minister Abe, President Trump telling reporters in New York.
We're starting trade talks with Japan. And I'm sure we'll make a very good deal.
And after an ag trade trip to Japan back in June, Ted McKinney said Japanese buyers told him they already love U.S. ag products. Why?
First, the quality. It's a good quality product. Hand in glove with that is the trust in the regulatory system that says it's safe. And then, you know, usually the U.S., with its size and scope, has an opportunity to deliver volumes of product.
So U.S. ag products are an easy sell in Japan. It's already our fourth largest market for U.S. ag products. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Oh, let's stay with trade and the president. Mr. Trump yesterday took sharp aim at Canada, stating he dislikes Canada's representative, potentially referring to Foreign Minister Freeland, who has led the NAFTA negotiations. There's a good chance still of a deal with Canada, but I'm not making anything near what they want to do, Trump said in a news conference in New York. He also reiterated his plan to rename NAFTA the USMC Pact, the three countries' initials, and, like the United States Marine Corps, which he says, I love. That after Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau earlier in the day said a broad range of paths are ahead of Canada if talks don't wrap up by Sunday. He says, we're going to keep focusing on trying to get the right deal for Canadians. For his part, the lead negotiator for the United States, Robert Lighthizer, says meetings are scheduled with the House Ways and Means and Senate Finance Committees, where he will brief lawmakers on issues including the status of NAFTA and the launch of talks with Japan. That according to congressional sources. From trade, we move to the RFS, where media reports out of Washington this week indicate the White House is ready to announce a lift on the ban on summertime sales of E15 in most of the country, a barrier that has long been considered unnecessary, imposing a restriction that EPA research itself has shown is needless. It would be a move by the Trump administration, long awaited by the ethanol industry, which has questioned the president's commitment to the change for the several months since he first endorsed the idea back in May. And finally today, with less than 4 days for Congress to pass a new farm bill before the current law expires after Sunday, top ag lawmakers now readily admit they'll likely have to finish their work after the November 6th midterm elections. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, Friday, the United States Department of Agriculture will tally how much of last year's corn and soybean crops are still left in the bin around the nation. The grain stocks report is more of a census of what's on hand than an estimate. This is because USDA collects information from more than 9,000 grain elevators, terminals, and other storage facilities around the United States. It helps them to determine the total number of last year's bushels on hand as of the first day of September. Well, University of Illinois agricultural economist Todd Hubbs says his calculations aren't far off from what USDA has already projected the report will show.
For corn in particular, it'll come down to the feed and residual number and how much feed was used in the fourth quarter of the 2017-18 marketing year. And it looks like soybeans are on track to hit the projection USDA currently has.
USDA's ending stocks figure from the September World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report for soybeans is 395 million bushels. Hub's calculation is 4 million bushels larger, but still very close to that figure. Because soybeans aren't fed directly to livestock, it's much easier to keep track of the total number of bushels used. That's not the case for corn. The feed and residual figure oftentimes will vary outside of expectations, says Hubs.
I have the USDA's feed and residual use to meet their current projection at 754 million bushels. My projection, using historical data when we've seen the large livestock herds in conjunction with the kind of wheat price, kind of distillers grains price we've seen, I have fourth quarter feed and residual at 725 million bushels, which is quite a jump over last year. It'll really come down to what that number is in the fourth quarter to what the corn stocks would be. But right now, I don't see a strong deviation from the USDA's current ending stocks number, so I wouldn't expect much of a price reaction from the September 1st corn stocks reports this year.
USDA's current ending stocks projection is 2.002 billion bushels. Hub's number is just a little bigger at 2.02 billion, or 18 million more. The grain stocks report is scheduled for release at 11 a.m. Central Time tomorrow. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Have you made that donation yet at willpledge.org or 217-244-9455? I sure do hope so, because it's important right now that you give and make a donation, a pledge of support to the programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to do it right now. Hey, thank you so much, and it's easy to do, 217-244-9455. On the phone line with us is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being there today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Todd.
I know that you've been watching the basis levels and futures both. Basis has widened out, at least for soybeans. I saw that for sure. How things been acting in your area?
Well, we're pretty wide on both corn and beans compared to what we typically see. You know, corn, we're looking at about 50 under. Decatur's been right around 35 under, so that's pretty much the norm, I guess. We're usually 15, 16 cents under Decatur as far as our local bids are concerned, both for corn and beans. So beans are looking at around 80 under, definitely pretty wide basis levels, at least in our part of the world.
Do you see any time in the near future where producers will have an opportunity to market soybeans across the scale, or should they be doing that already?
Well, I guess that's a great question. I'll say this first of all. I know a lot of producers sold a fair amount of beans, $9 to $10 and even above. If you didn't sell any at all, though, I would like for you to at least sit down and search the numbers. What kind of yields are you looking at? I know you said before we got on the air, we're kind of yields you guys are seeing on your farm. And given those types of yields, even if you mark it across the scale at 780, you add 82 cents that you know you're going to get, and you've got 850 beans times whatever the yield is, 70, 80, we've heard lots of 90s. With some of these yields, I think producers can still do fairly well. I just think that they need to get out their spreadsheet to make sure they know exactly what they're looking at, because the situation for most, what I'm being reported to, is better than what people thought it was.
And still, producers will also be faced with the situation that they probably already made their decision as to which crop they should store in on-farm storage. Do you have a drether?
Well, I think that it's pretty tough to make a mistake there in that both corn and beans have an awfully good carry. I think the mistake a producer might make is if they put those in the bin and then they don't lock the carry in. I think that's one of the most important pieces if we're going to put corn or beans in the bin. Go out in May or July, lock that carry in, and we all would hope that their basis is going to improve. It generally does, and this year could be a year, especially in the case of corn, where basis might surprise a few folks and narrow up quite a bit more than what maybe some people are thinking.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time, and be safe on the farm.
Yes, thank you. Have a great day, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. Do visit our website and make that donation right now at willpledge.org or call 217-244-9455. And thank you. Thank you so very much. Now we're joined by Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. Let's start in the Western Corn Belt. What are conditions like there?
Well, we've seen a lot of rain in the Northern Corn Belt and the Southern Corn Belt. The area between, from Kansas through Missouri and Illinois, has not seen a whole lot of rain over the last week or so. So this is where the conditions are best for harvesting and planting. As we move forward, there's not going to be a whole lot of rain around. There will be some showers here and there through Saturday, maybe even Sunday. But most of the focus going forward will regard how much rain we see in the Northern Corn Belt next week. Starting up about Sunday and more so on Monday and Tuesday, we'll see a number of thunderstorm clusters develop to the north of Interstate 80. That occurs because of a warm front that moves on to the north, and that will turn temperatures a whole lot warmer once again next week. You know it's a little bit cool out right now, and it looks like it will be quite a bit warmer in about 4 days from now. High temperatures should return to the 70s and even some 80s across the southern half of the Corn Belt. So all in all, Tom, a little bit of rain in the north coming up, but until then, pretty dry and pretty mild to the south, so things should be looking okay until sometime later next week.
So not bad for the harvest season right here in the Corn Belt. How about for the planting season in South America?
Well, we've seen some pretty good rains in Brazil over the last week, and as we move forward, we're going to see a lot of rain in Argentina in particular. Argentina is still a little bit dry. We had that drought back in the spring of the U.S. earlier in the year, as you recall. The drought has broken for the most part, but there are still some lingering effects of that, with dryness over the last 60 and 90-day periods still fairly evident. There is going to be around 1 to 2 inches of rain over the next 3 to 4 days in all of those dry areas. Normally, in the month of September, you only see about 2 inches of rain for the entire month, so we are talking about a lot of rain relative to their history. So we don't think the dryness is going to be much of a problem in Argentina by the time we talk again next week. That will help to improve those conditions for upcoming corn and soybean planting. And more so, their sunflowers are already planted. Their wheat is about to move into the reproductive phase. So this is pretty well timed for both of those crops too.
And in Europe, I take it remains dry, though we're in the fall season there too.
That's right. Rapeseed is now planted in a lot of Europe and wheat planting is underway. The big problem though is in France. France is the number one producer of both of those crops, and it's been dry here for a long time. It's going to stay dry. There was a pretty big rain over the weekend across the northern tip of France and then extending into Germany, Poland, and Denmark. This is where the drought situation eased up a little bit a few days ago. But it did not break in France, and it looks to stay pretty dry going forward. All signs that we look at here show that they're in a drought, and that is not well timed for the rapeseed crop or for their wheat crop. But as you noted, They're going to be moving into the winter here over the next couple of weeks and couple of months, just like what we have here in the U.S. So the window is closing for big rains to show up before these crops go dormant. There is still a little bit of time, probably more of a rapeseed problem than a wheat problem right now, though.
Hey, thanks so much, Mike.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
That's Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Make a pledge of support at willpledge.org.